Broadcast of the Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series is made possible in part by ProLiance Energy. ProLiance, adding power to energy. Information is at ProLiance.com.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. This month, WellPoint CEO and President Angela Brawley addresses the club on health care reform. WellPoint is the nation's largest health benefits provider. Brawley says healthcare needs reform, but the health insurance reform proposals currently on the table just won't get the job done. She says hospitals and doctors should be paid for their quality of care and not just their quantity. Brawley says she's against a proposed government-run public option that would compete against insurers such as WellPoint.
Thank you to the Economic Club of Indiana for having me here. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today about healthcare reform. As we're seeing across the country and right here today, people are very passionate about healthcare. And I think it's really a good thing. And it doesn't come as a surprise. Healthcare is a very important issue for our country. It makes up a remarkable 18% of the total U.S. economy, and it's growing. Healthcare is also extremely personal. Few decisions are more intimate than the ones we make about our healthcare. And as we make more of these decisions, and as personal as healthcare can become, we want to make sure we can protect our healthcare security. The reality is this: taking on an issue that's as big as healthcare, that touches so many people in such personal ways, is going to create some disagreements. So the question becomes, if we want to get something done, and I believe we must, what can we agree on? Can we agree on the problem? And if so, can we agree on the right solutions? Today, I'd like to give you my thoughts on those two questions. And I'd like to talk to you about how we can get healthcare done in this country and how we can get it done right. So let me start off by saying I am here today as an advocate for healthcare reform. Now, most people might not expect that. To hear that from the CEO of the nation's largest health insurance company, serving more members than any other, but it's true. Most Americans know that the healthcare debate has been very intense for the last couple of months. And things really started to get serious, at least for this round of healthcare reform, right after the presidential election, when the first proposals were being put forward by the Congress. That's also when health insurance companies across the country stepped up and said that we support healthcare reform. In early December, we announced that we favor real and comprehensive healthcare reform, and we laid out very specific proposals. It was significant not only because people would expect us to oppose healthcare reform, because we had opposed it 16 years ago, but as well, we put forward a broad set of proposals that were bold and that would really improve the quality and affordability of healthcare in this country and achieve coverage for the uninsured. Now, I'm not going to go into every aspect of our plan, but I will give you an example of one of the important policies that we proposed. We said that insurers should guarantee coverage for everyone. For all, including those with pre-existing conditions, in combination with the requirement that everyone get and stay covered. That proposal in particular was unprecedented. It means that if you've lost your job and your health insurance, you would still be able to buy health insurance in the private market if you have diabetes or heart disease or cancer. It is a little like us selling you a homeowner's policy after the fire has started in your house. And while that's challenging, and I'll describe some of the challenges with that later, we think it can work if everyone has insurance, meaning that those who are healthy and less healthy are insured and in what we call the pool. This and other proposals we made show that we are willing to make major changes in how we operate today to give every American higher quality, more affordable health care. Unfortunately, since we came forward last December, the discussion has changed dramatically in Washington, D.C. It has gone from a debate about health care reform to a debate about health insurance reform. If you listen very carefully, the language is all around health insurance reform. So what's the difference? A lot. So I'm going to talk about that and start with why health care reform is so important. When you look at our health care system today, it does a number of things very well. There is a tremendous amount of scientific and technological innovation here in America. Companies right here in Indianapolis, like Eli Lilly, are working on new drugs and new cures to improve people's lives. Right here in Indianapolis and across the country, we also have excellent hospitals and doctors and nurses that care deeply about their patients. And there's no doubt that our country is the greatest source of innovation in medicine in the world today. And we have unmatched flexibility, convenience, and choice when it comes to interacting with the healthcare system. But let's face it, there is a lot of inefficiency. About 6 years ago, the New England Journal of Medicine published a study that found that patients receive the recommended care, what we call evidence-based medicine, only about half of the time. That means the other half of the time, patients aren't getting the right test, the right diagnosis, the right treatment, or maybe the right follow-up. That's overuse, underuse, misuse, and abuse. There is a tremendous amount of waste. In fact, another study by the Institute of Medicine found that 30% of healthcare spending in America is unnecessary. It doesn't cure disease. It doesn't treat disease. It doesn't prevent disease. Simply put, it's waste, and there's a lot of it. In fact, we're spending about $750 billion every year on healthcare that doesn't improve the health of a single person. Now, what does that inefficiency translate into? It means the system isn't providing the value that it should. All it does is drive up cost, and that's the crux of the problem. So why do we need healthcare reform? As I said before, healthcare costs are rising, and they're rising at an unsustainable rate. And there are consequences for the rising cost of healthcare. There are consequences for the government and for all of us as patients, as workers, and as taxpayers. When Medicare was first created in 1965, the government projected that in 1990, the program would cost $9 billion per year. In 1990, however, Medicare cost $67 billion that year. And last year, total Medicare spending was $468 billion. This year, the Medicare trustees projected that the program, which provides health coverage to 45 million people, and which many of us had hoped would cover us, will be bankrupt within 8 years. Why? The incentives are wrong. Traditional Medicare pays for quantity rather than quality. And all of the pilot programs that were intended to help government change that to pay quality in traditional Medicare have failed. Earlier this year, in fact, a study commissioned by the Minnesota Department of Human Services found that there is a significant quality gap between government-run plans and private plans. Only 60% of enrollees in public plans aged 52 to 69 received a mammogram in the prior 2 years, compared to 77% in private, of the privately insured. And according to a study this year in the New England Journal of Medicine, hospital readmission rates, which is when you're sent back to the hospital for the same reason that you were earlier admitted, in traditional Medicare, those rates are 19.6%. In the Medicare Advantage plans that our company runs, the rate is 17.5%. And in pilot programs that we have focused on hospital readmissions, that number's been reduced to 10%. So why do we need health care reform? The consequences of the rising cost of health care are real for business. I'm sure many of you here today have a role in managing a business or you own a business, and you know better than anyone the impact of healthcare costs on your bottom line, on your employees, and on your ability to compete. You know, and we appreciate, many of you all are Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield customers, and we appreciate your business, but we also understand your challenges. We know that you're making hard choices at a very difficult time. And we know that if healthcare costs continue to go up, those choices are going to be even more difficult. So why do we need healthcare reform? Today, there are 46 million uninsured people in America. Now, 12 million of them are currently eligible for some form of public program that could help give them covered. So, if we're going to create more government-run healthcare programs, we need to do a better job of making sure that the intended beneficiaries know about the program, how to enroll in the program, and how to stay in the program. There's also another 12 million of the uninsured who could afford coverage, but they just don't buy it. But still, there are too many uninsured Americans. So why do we need health care reform? Here's the bottom line on why we need health care reform. The high and rising cost of health care in America is just not sustainable. It's inefficient and promotes quantity over quality. If we leave this unaddressed, it poses a real threat to the social and fiscal obligations of our government and to the health and the prosperity of the American people. So, if we know that we need health care reform, then we have to ask ourselves, what kind of health care reform will address those problems? As I said earlier, the debate in Washington has shifted from discussion about health care reform to health insurance reform. And we're hopeful that that conversation will turn around. Because quite simply, the health insurance reform proposals currently on the table just won't get the job done. Why? If you completely eliminated insurance company industry profits, which is clearly the aim of some, you would pay for 2 days of healthcare in America. And in the process, you'd eliminate the private market mechanism to control costs and improve quality in the health care being delivered. A study last year by PricewaterhouseCoopers shed some light on this. So assume you had a $1 bill that represented your health insurance premium. 3 cents goes to insurance industry profits. 10 cents goes to value-added services that can reduce health care costs and improve quality, such as our health and wellness programs. Yes, it also covers the cost of claims and payment processing, but importantly, it includes the cost of perhaps our most vital services, the work that our 3,000 nurses and doctors do, so our members can receive health care at the right time, at the right place, and at the right price. But the vast majority of your premium dollar, 87 cents, goes to medical care, such as hospital stays, doctor visits, surgeries, and prescription drugs. The fact is, we won't solve the healthcare problems facing our country by only focusing on the insurance side of the equation. If we try to do that, we'll do a lot of damage to private sector innovation, driving better quality and cost. And it's crucial that we don't try to solve the coverage problem and then later get to the cost problem. As many of you all may know, in 2006, Massachusetts passed health care reform that was aimed at getting to universal coverage in that state. The strategy was to deal with coverage first and then get to costs later. So Massachusetts was trying to solve for about 600,000 uninsured people in their state, and they have made some progress in getting more people covered. But the spending on their program, which is called Commonwealth Care, exceeded the original estimates, similar to cost overruns in Medicare. For Commonwealth Care, which cost $630 million in 2007, it's now expected to cost $1.3 billion for 2009. So the Massachusetts experience tells us that we have to address coverage and cost hand in hand. So how on a national level do we achieve health care reform that addresses coverage and cost? We believe that insurance companies have a role to play. We can and we are making a difference. That evidence-based medicine tells us that 50% of the health care isn't what it should be. We can help fix that, and we do. We reward doctors and hospitals for adopting protocols that their own peers, other doctors, have identified as best practices. We're also delivering transparency tools so that you, as a member of one of our Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield plans, can go and see cost and quality information. For example, you can get information about a knee replacement surgery you might be planning to have, and that knowledge will help you as a member have an informed discussion with your doctor and make the best decisions about the cost and quality of your own care. We're bringing our own doctors and nurses to the table to reach out to our members who have heart disease or diabetes or asthma, and they're making sure our members get the right screenings, the right medications to help them better manage their care. They're making sure you get the right care at the right place, at the right time, at the right price. And we've even changed our incentives. So as employees, we're rewarded when our members get better and safer care. Yes, we tied part of our compensation to better health for our members. In the end, we're transforming our company. We believe that our business and our future is not just about processing claims and managing risk. We're about giving our members access to better quality, more affordable, and higher value health care. Can we do this? Yes. In fact, we have done it. You may have heard about the need to bend the trend. Without wandering too deeply into the language of actuaries and economists, this means that the trend of healthcare costs is projected to rise at an unsustainable rate, and we need to bring down or bend the trend. Our industry actually did that in the late 80s and early 90s. The macroeconomic trend of healthcare costs was actually flattened during a period of time. It was bent and flattened while our company and others were delivering on managed care. At the heart of managed care was that your primary care doctor, your family doctor, was paid a fixed fee to coordinate your care. And you as a member were required to go to that doctor first. This addressed costs, but it wasn't always convenient. And it wasn't always focused on getting you, the patient, our member, the information that you needed to have a good discussion about healthcare value with your doctor. You wanted more choice, so we created broader networks to give you more options. But we have learned from that experience. We are and we will continue to innovate to provide our members with a good choice of doctors and hospitals, as well as information and incentives to make good healthcare value choices. But we're doing more by partnering with doctors and hospitals to pay for better outcomes and better care coordination. And we've also invested in health information technology so we can notify you or your doctor if one of the medications you're on has an interaction with another drug or if you've missed an important screening. And we're rewarding you for making good choices around exercise and a balanced diet. Now, this doesn't mean that the private sector can or will do it alone. We also don't think government should do it alone. We need to work together. Under the existing system, within 3 years, half of all healthcare spending in America is expected to flow through a government program. Obviously, this is going to affect all of us as we age, as we work, and as we pay taxes. Right now, there is a huge tax of about $88 billion that those of us with private insurance pay. It's called cost shifting. It occurs because government sets rates it pays to doctors and hospitals for Medicare and Medicaid so low. As a result, the gap between what is paid for the cost of services gets shifted over to private health plans. So if you have health insurance, your family pays about 15% more for your coverage, or about $1,500 per year, because of this cost shift. If government, through a newly formed public option or co-op, pays at these lower rates, the cost shift to private plans will go up even further. And before you know it, the public plan takes on more members and creates more cost shift, and so on and so on. Sounds a lot like Fannie Mae for healthcare, and I think you all know how that experiment's going. We're also being charged the tax for the uninsured because cost shifting occurs here too. When the uninsured receive medical care but they can't pay their bills, the private sector has to absorb a portion of these costs. Right now, cost shifting for the uninsured adds another $1,000 per year to your family's health plan. So adding it all up, your family and your policy carries about $2,500 of these shifted costs. So how can the private sector work with government to create a sustainable healthcare system? First, we have to refocus the debate on healthcare reform. We agree that we can improve how individuals buy health insurance in this country. We can do that by requiring that everyone have to have health insurance similar to auto collision insurance for drivers. And with that requirement, we should include a guarantee that everyone, including people with pre-existing conditions, will get coverage and will not be excluded. But it's clear that not everyone can afford health insurance, including many who are uninsured today. And we know a law requiring someone to buy something that they can't afford to buy won't be effective. The plan must address underlying health care costs so that coverage is affordable. And for those who still can't afford it and aren't eligible for public programs, the government could offer assistance to help them purchase coverage. We also need to enable private plans to reward people to make healthy choices by giving them a discount to promote healthy behaviors like not smoking, eating right, and exercising. Let's encourage consumerism in healthcare so that each of us will be a better shopper for the healthcare services we need. Let's not put everyone in a one-size-fits-all plan. The private market can and should be free to offer a range of choices. Let's change the reimbursement model to reward outcomes. And while it seems politically futile, let's talk about medical malpractice reform. Let's talk about, that's worth a clap. Let's also talk about comparing the cost and outcomes of different medicines and procedures. And let's focus on how to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. Of course, all of these things are easier said than done. The fact is, and we've all seen it over the past few weeks, healthcare reform is a hard issue. That's why we have to be thoughtful and careful and deliberate about how we do this. We have to understand there are consequences with change. For example, some have suggested that we should just guarantee to issue coverage for everyone whenever they want it. Sounds good, but when given that option, we know that people do not buy health insurance until they're sick. We see it now in New York. We're Empire Blue Cross Blue Shield in New York. And if you live in New York, you can buy health insurance at any time, even if you have a pre-existing condition. But you're not required to. And as a result, it's driven up the premiums for everyone. Premiums in New York for the same plan offered here in Indiana cost multiples more. Also, there are many more options available here in Indiana. So a policy for a 20-year-old ranges from $53.31 to $202.99 per month here in Indiana. A policy for a 20-year-old in Albany, New York, where there are fewer choices to be made, but where there's a similar benefit plan compared to the $202 one here in Indiana, ranges from $832.58 to $1,047.04. That is just not going to work. We can guarantee coverage for all, but we will have to require that all get coverage. And we have to make that requirement real. That way, everyone's in the pool. Everyone shares the risk. And everyone can get into a system that helps them get higher quality, more affordable care that's there when they need it. Healthcare is a very complex issue. And as a health insurer, we know that as well as anyone. Part of our mission, why we exist, is to help our customers and our members navigate the complexities of the healthcare system. That's what we do every day. We work to simplify the connection between health, care, and value. And I know that our customers and our members value their health plan. In fact, a Washington Post poll conducted this summer showed that 81% of people are satisfied with their health insurance coverage. As a country, I believe we can get health care reform right. It won't be easy. And it should not be quick. But if we do redirect the debate to health care reform, we'll fix what's broken without breaking what works. We'll enable the private sector to improve quality and affordability and drive efficiency and value in health care. We'll dramatically expand health care coverage for the uninsured. And above all, we'll take a giant step towards securing better health and greater prosperity for our country, not just for today, but for future generations. That's real reform. That's responsible reform. And that's sustainable reform. So let's get back to where we started. Let's have a bipartisan debate around what matters most, your health care. Thank you. And I think we're going to take questions.
We'll now have a brief question and answer session. And for anyone who has a question, if you will put it on the white cards that are on your table and hold them up, one of the staff members will pick them up from you. And I already have a couple of questions that have come in. One is, many of the businesses represented in this room offer health insurance through your company. With that in mind, what current health care reform proposal worries you the most?
I mentioned it in my remarks, the idea of a public option. We have public programs now, but our expectation is even if in the beginning a public option said they weren't going to have the right to negotiate or they're not going to negotiate, they would end up over time setting rates. You know, Medicare originally, when it was created, it was supposed to negotiate rates with doctors and hospitals. And within 5 years, it was setting rates. And so our expectation is that a public option, a government-run public option, would ultimately, if not originally, charge the Medicare and Medicaid rates. And so, you know, we would see that potentially as a real challenge in terms of that cost-shifting issue will get exacerbated, and more folks would end up in the public plan, and we would be shifting to, the private plans that would remain.
Thank you. The questions are coming in fast and furiously. Okay. Here's another one. Which areas are the WellPoint lobbying efforts most focused on right now?
You know, I think in my remarks I described really what our focus is, which is to try to redirect this discussion to one that's really going to make a difference in terms of, are we solving for the health care question? Are we getting to quality? Are we getting to cost? What are the meaningful measures? And, you know, there are many pieces of legislation that are out there. Many of us are waiting to hear from the Senate Finance Committee. There is a bipartisan effort that is ongoing there. And so we're looking forward to seeing what that legislation would hold and to see if it gets to that question around quality and cost.
Here's an issue that's generated several questions. Does WellPoint have a position on the undocumented immigrant issue? What impact do these individuals have on U.S. taxpayers and total cost?
You know, we have not formally taken a position with respect to undocumented aliens. We know that in the legislation that came out of the House, and there's a Senate bill as well, they are saying that it's not going to cover the undocumented aliens. We don't know what the Senate Finance Committee approach will be to that issue. And it's a challenging one because we know that there are health care costs that are incurred and are part of that cost shift that we see now around the uninsured.
Thank you. Another issue that's generated a couple of questions relates to employer-based coverage. Should it be the standard? Do we need business involved in health care, and couldn't we change the tax code and promote consumerism?
You know, early on in the discussion, we said that, you know, we really need to change the tax status that exists for individuals, because when you get your policy through your employer today, there is a tax benefit, a deduction for that. If we had that in the individual market, then there would be equality. There wouldn't be, you know, a penalty to buy after tax with the individual market. So, you know, we agree. I think part of the reality, and we've looked at this as we've seen a number of different bills, is we are starting where we are starting with a system that is the majority of Americans, the vast majority of Americans, receive their coverage through their employer. And, you know, we can debate that, but we have to start there, and we have to look at what that means for any potential transition. So is a transition more to the individual market? Does that make sense? Potentially it would, but if we need to have equal footing, and we would need to have a reasonable transition. When we ask our customers that, and we ask business broadly, and it may be more politically motivated than a pure business reason, folks say, no, they don't want it to go to government. They will lose control, and they would still pay the bill in that case. So there's a real concern about losing the ability to have that impact on your employees so that they can be present and, you know, functioning in the job that you have them there for.
Thank you. Staying with the theme of health care that is provided by employers, has WellPoint considered providing a program where small businesses who cannot afford individually to supply benefits will allow groups to join together to provide benefits to employees?
You know, we have some arrangements. Actually, Rob Hillman, who's our president of Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield of Indiana, has worked with the chamber quite extensively on making sure that we had a range of products that are available in the small group market. You know, one of the things that's a caution out there about the small group market, both here in Indiana and across the states, is that there is heavy regulation of small business insurance now. And essentially, we're able to price the premium for small businesses within a range of anywhere between 1 to 25, meaning the older, less healthy groups would be more expensive than the younger, healthier groups, and there's a broad range. The discussion on the Hill now would narrow that range to potentially 1 to 5. So there'll be significant transition around the cost of a small group policy. And if you're on the older, healthier side in terms of the group within your small group, you might see a beneficial change. If you're on the younger, healthier group, you're going to have a big rate shock in terms of really cross-subsidization that would occur in the small group market.
Thank you. Well, focusing a little bit more on WellPoint now, how does WellPoint currently plan for the future in an environment with so many different alternatives for the future? And in the event that a public option gets passed, How will WellPoint adapt to compete?
You know, it's a good question about how do you plan a strategy when you know that the basic fundamentals of your business model might be changed by regulation. And so what we're doing is we're really looking at the need to be efficient and to drive value in healthcare, and making the investments are going to matter no matter what. So we know we have to focus on making sure there's information out there. We're focusing on investing in health information technology so we can get you the information that you need so you can have that conversation to really look at quality, to look at cost. You know, we're making some investment in how we would deliver, you know, the care in a most efficient way. So, you know, it's a very valid question, and we think that we add value no matter what the regulatory situation might be in the end, because our customers value the health care that we can deliver, the access that we can get, and the health care security that they can get. So if the public plan were to come to pass, I think it would be extremely challenging for our businesses and for us to really understand. It depends on what it looks like in the end, but we don't think it's necessary, and we don't think it adds value to the equation.
Well, speaking of value, what if fraud were so prevalent, the hospitals should be swimming in profit, yet the opposite is true. Can you say more about your argument that substantial savings can be recovered from waste and fraud without destroying providers?
You know, and it is our goal to work with providers, doctors and hospitals in partnership to create the most value, to make sure they have the most incentives. And, you know, I think this question of fraud and abuse is spread across the industry, so I don't think you can look at, you know, at any specific segment of healthcare. We ought to look at all the segments of healthcare and look at where there are opportunities to create the same outcome or a better outcome at a lower price. You know, I think everyone, all the hospital administrators here, the doctors, you know, all the supply providers, we need to be more efficient in the delivery of healthcare, and we need to make sure. But right now, we're not incented, you know, as a doctor or hospital, if you're paid for quantity rather than quality, then that's an incentive that drives that behavior to increase the quantity of procedures delivered rather than improve the quality of the outcome. If we could avoid disease, then prevent disease, then we don't have to have that procedure or potentially that medication.
Thank you. Hopefully, stay with the theme of providers for the moment. What are your thoughts on malpractice reform? Say more about your ideas regarding change.
You know, I said in my remarks that that's politically futile. You know, we keep bringing this issue up. We believe that medical malpractice, the practices around it that have been developed over time, and I was a lawyer in my past, so I totally understand this. You know, it prevents more disclosure and more communication around what might have gone wrong, because, you know, that creates a liability challenge. If there's an error in medicine, people are reluctant, you know, thoughtfully, but reluctant to sometimes communicate as well as they could and should. We do think defensive medicine increases the cost of healthcare. We think there are tests that are probably unnecessary, and diagnosis-related tools that are used probably excessively because of the fear of medical malpractice. And so we would happily invite a better discussion around medical malpractice reform that has fallen on deaf ears primarily as we go to the Hill, because that is not a topic that's got a lot of momentum right now in D.C.
How do you address the charges that certain geographic areas have almost no competition among private insurers?
You know, we are Blue Cross and Blue Shield in 14 states, and in each one of these states, we have a number of significant national competitors. There are about 1,300 health insurance plans out there, and we find that particularly with national competitors or significant local competitors, we have significant competition in each of the states. that we're doing business in. And so, you know, this idea that we need to keep a private industry honest through a government-run plan is really, I don't think it's a fair assessment of the competitive environment in all the states that we do business in.
If Medicare is on the verge of bankruptcy, what is your long-range solution to helping it remain solvent without any loss of benefits?
You know, Medicare has been through three different iterations. We're on the third, actually, of what was called Medicare Risk, Medicare Plus Choice, and now Medicare Advantage, which was a long-term idea that over time, if the private industry participants, our insurance company and others, participated in the Medicare program where we could give you a Medicare benefit, then we could over time improve the quality, as we have shown and proven with the readmission rate comment I made earlier, but then over time reduce cost. Now, what happened when Medicare was last legislated, the new version of it, they really changed the way that payment is made so that in rural areas the payment rates went way up because there are fewer providers there and we needed to make sure we get everyone in the network. That program is really at risk. There's been significant cuts to Medicare for next year, and we expect there'll be more cuts in the Medicare Advantage program, and that will reduce benefits for seniors. A lot of folks aren't talking about that now, but those, we are obligated to make sure we provide benefits that relate to the premium that we're receiving from the federal government. So I would expect that the Medicare Advantage programs will see more cuts, and ultimately, there needs to be a transformation of the traditional Medicare program because it's not sustainable at the current rate.
What percentage of WellPoint's 2008 revenue was profit, and is there ever a point at which insurance profits should be given back to members in the form of lower premiums?
You know, we really always try to keep our premiums, competitive, but they reflect rising healthcare costs. So our margin, as I described in the Pricewaterhouse example, you know, the insurance company margins tend to be around 3 to 5%. Ours were 4.1% last year. Now that, you know, there's a question, should we always return that? You know, we create value. We create value by having more customers, so we think it's very consistent with the creation of value. When you look at our margins relative to other companies in healthcare, they're very different. So biotech margins tend to be in the 18.5%, pharmaceutical margins in the 16.5%, medical suppliers in the double-digit range. So I think we have to be fair and look at all the different segments in healthcare, what value is being created and what return is being created on that value.
Thank you. The administrative cost to providers in collecting receivables from Anthem is dramatically higher than any other payer. What is your plan to make Anthem a leader in claims processing efficiency and thereby eliminating unnecessary health care costs?
We absolutely agree with the need to create more administrative simplification. And we are very committed to that as part of our reform effort and as part of our operations. So we have done a number of things to try to simplify the administrative cost and reduce the burden on doctors and hospitals for the administration of claims and claims processing. We've invested in a company that will provide over time what's called a multi-payer portal, where all doctors and doctors and hospitals will be able to access all of the insurance companies in the market through one portal instead of having to go on the Anthem portal versus another portal. And we're really looking throughout our company and how we can improve that process, how we can streamline it and make it less burdensome. So it's an important area of focus for us.
If you were leading the Congress, what would be the single item you would focus on that, in your view, would really result in meaningful reform?
I think I would love to be the head of the Congress.
You mean it's not enough to be the eighth most important woman?
But, you know, there's a lot of sausage making in that process, I must admit. But, you know, I would really focus on what is driving costs. how we can really affect that. There's some great discussion happening. It doesn't always make it to the bill. And so I would really focus on the facts.
Very good. Okay. And then we'll, I think we have time for one last question. Does the requirement to guarantee issue and the liability to no longer reimburse for cover pre-existing conditions necessitate the individual mandate? And does this change impact the pricing of health insurance in the private employer group market?
In the employer market, I think the employer market is going to be more impacted, particularly for small business, by some of these rules that are changing around ratings. And so that's independent of what we're seeing in the individual market, which, you know, surprisingly, there was an expectation that more people would oppose a mandate for individuals to buy health insurance. But given the evidence, the experiences in New York, our experience in Maine and other places, that we know it just doesn't work. It gets really inexpensive, or very, very, very expensive, and people just can't afford it. So the individual market mandate, we think, is received more acceptance than we originally expected. But the employer market will be impacted by the significant kind of rate shock potentially. And unless we get to that underlying, what drives healthcare costs, innovation in technology delivered in healthcare, which is good for human beings, costs a lot of money. We use it a lot because we're incented for quantity rather than quality. We know there's inefficiency, we know there's waste, so we've got to get to those things to really find the solution. So thank you very much.
That's WellPoint CEO and President Angela Brawley. WellPoint is the country's largest healthcare insurer and operates Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Indiana. Eric Meslin has a different take on the healthcare reform issue. Meslin is the director of the Indiana University Center for Bioethics and the co-director of the IUPUI Signature Center Consortium on Health Policy, Law, and Bioethics. Meslin says he likes the public option because it would give most people access to good health care, and that's good for society in general.
The reality is we already fund a lot of health care through the public purse, and we do it very well. The margins are lower, the efficiency is better, it's not as costly, and we have every reason to believe that if we just extended Medicare to everyone, you don't even have to call it a public option, you could call it something else. Unfortunately, and I feel very badly saying this, but unfortunately, a lot of this argument, a lot of this debate has been controlled by those who have very good public relations arms and are trying to convince the public that providing health care through a small number of payers is somehow un-American or anti-democratic or inconsistent with the country's values. I think that's sad that the public is being led down that path. I mean, I think it's really sad. If we really want to ask the hard question, it's not who pays for it, but what kind of society do we want to live in? The cost of care, the U.S. spends almost twice as much as the next largest industrialized country in cost per person per year. And we get far worse outcomes on any metric. Infant mortality, maternal mortality, number of people immunized, length of life, length of quality of life. And, it's sort of a tragedy that the debate has become one not of the facts, but has been who has the best rhetoric. So we talk about something like a public option. Worry or fear that you've described, I think, is in some ways evidence of the real problem that we're discussing, and that is whether we think of healthcare as a commercial transaction and health as a commodity that can be bought, sold, traded, exchanged, or otherwise bartered. And I guess I stand on the side of those who would say that healthcare is not the same thing as a washing machine or a car. It may be something more like the roads, or maybe it's like the common defense, or maybe it's like education. Now, there are some people who don't think that education is a public good that should be provided on behalf of the citizens. I do. I think that the interstate highway system is a common good, and everyone should be able to use it, and they shouldn't have to pay for it privately. If they want to get a special road, then they go on a special road, and they can pay a toll. But I think that health is, if not special, then certainly quite unique. And as much as it would be easy to simply dismiss the fact that health care in this country is seen as a commercial activity, I don't think it would be that impossible or that hard to step back from that precipice and say, yes, people should be able to make money in this. Look, in every country, including Canada, which I use because it's so close, and we share a common border, and the world's two largest trading partners, and the medical students go back and forth, so there is a lot in common. Doctors are not paid by the government. Doctors are in private practice. But so long as we just simply lump health care in with every other commodity that can be bought and sold, then it's really, we're up to two strikes. We treat it as a health care, as a good to be bought and sold, in which case it's not so much a concern about who has access, but how cost drives the outcome. Incidentally, I mean, it's sort of interesting that the Congressional Budget Office has indicated that it might be a cost saving to the United States if something like the public option in any of its forms were introduced. Why? Because we would probably limit the number of health insurance companies. And this is not a criticism of health insurance companies per se. That just happens to be one of the places. Even though they don't contribute the lion's share of the costs, they are a player administratively and otherwise. So if it's about costs, we know that there are ways of achieving efficiencies.
That was Eric Meslin, the director of the Indiana Center for Bioethics at IUPUI. Thanks for joining us for the Economic Club of Indiana. Next month's speaker is John Stossel. Stossel is a reporter for ABC News and a co-anchor of the TV show 2020. Stossel is perhaps best known for taking a critical but humorous look at society's problems with his Gimme a Break segments. Be sure to join us then. Thanks for listening.
Proliance Energy, providing natural gas to more than 1,200 commercial, industrial, utility, and municipal customers. Proliance, adding power to energy. Information is at proliance.com.